Radio Corporation of America presents The Magic Key. This afternoon, again, the magic key of RCA unlocks the barriers of space in bringing entertainment from Sweden, Paris, New York, and Chicago. 100 voices of the male chorus of the University of Stockholm, Walter Houston and Nan Sunderland in one of their fine dramatic roles, Harold Bauer, the great American pianist, and the rhythmic music from Richard Himber's orchestra. John B. Kennedy, here in Radio City, will interview Edgar Ansel Maurer in Paris. Director of Music for the National Broadcasting Company, Frank Black, leads the NBC Symphony in Mashkovsky's brilliant Malaganya. One night, Carnegie Hall rang with the voices of one of the most brilliant male choruses ever heard in America. They were America's guests from Sweden. The magic key of RCA turns, and RCA Communications reaches across the Atlantic to bring you the 100 voices of the University of Stockholm male chorus from Stockholm.
Hello, America. This is Stockholm. You will now listen to the University Chorus of Stockholm singing an old Swedish folk song, Dans Rodanetten, and Swedish Flag by Hugo Alvén. Conductor Einar Ralph. Good night, America.
listeners will be interested in knowing that the RCA receiver at Riverhead, which brought in Stockholm, was designed by the same engineers that built the new 1936 RCA Magic Brain radio with magic eye and metal tube. This new receiving set gives you worldwide reception with unusual reliability. A young man named Richard Himber had two momentous experiences at one time. He got his first pair of long pants and his first job at the same time. At 15, he led the orchestra accompanying Sophie Tucker. Today, he is the leader of one of America's outstanding dance bands and is recognized as the first to introduce harp interludes into programs of popular music. The magic key turns to Richard Himber, playing a medley of some of his Victor recordings. Without a word of warning, You Are My Lucky Star, Rain in Spain, and Can't We Be Friends? Stuart Allen singing.
Thank you.
you'll be interested in knowing that this is National Better Hearing Week. RCA, in addition to its many contributions to better and more enjoyable hearing over the radio, has perfected a new RCA apparatus, which is enabling the hard of hearing to hear sound motion pictures perfectly. The magic key now turns to Frank Black directing the NBC Symphony Orchestra in the Hungarian Dance No. 6 by Brahms. The front page news of the past week has centered around difficult international diplomacy. World powers in day and night conferences have been struggling for worldwide peace. As a climax, France is holding its election today. Whether France is to have a new regime or is to continue with its present government is being decided by ballot right now. Our own news commentator, John B. Kennedy, is going to interview one of the leading American journalists now in Paris, Edgar Allan Moura, winner of the Pulitzer Prize in 1932 for a series of his fine articles. The magic key turns. RCA Communications reaches across the Atlantic, bringing you the interview between John B. Kennedy in Radio City, New York, and Edgar Moura in Paris, France.
Good afternoon, all. Up to his neck in news in Europe is a smart American journalist, Edgar A. Moura. Mr. Moura is not only a reporter, but a real student of international politics. He knows what's going on before and behind the scenes. And he's waiting now at the other end of the Atlantic to tell you. How are you, Edgar Moura? Can you hear me?
Yes, good evening. Good evening, Mr. Kennedy.
How are the elections going in France? Will the result, Mr. Moura, have any bearing on the situation between Italy and England?
No, yeah, I think that the result, when known, will have a distinct bearing upon the relations between the League and Italy. And so far as the results are known at present, Mr. Laval's election in two places is certain. On the other hand, there are a number of senators from the north, including the well-known communist Marcel Cachat, who have also been elected. And until the final results are known, I think it impossible for any good prediction to be made.
I see. Now, from your intimate knowledge of Geneva, can you tell us what has really vitalized the League of Nations? For a long time, Mr. Maher, it seemed to us over here that the League was just a corpseless funeral, all messed up and no place to go. In the Charcoal War and the Manchurian outbreak, it seemed helpless. Now, with Italy invading Ethiopia, the League comes alarmingly to life. Could you explain?
Yes, I still figure. It was the action of Germany first and then Italy that vitalized the League by frightening the other states. You must remember that when Germany left, no one had ever done anything, and people all over the world said that the League was dead. When Italy then rebelled with the feeling that it could do whatever other states had done, public opinion in many states under Great Britain revolted and urged the League into a vital and violent action against Italy. For the first time, one may say that the League is functioning as its founders, and notably Woodrow Wilson, expected it to function.
What did the Germans and Italians think of the situation?
Perhaps I can answer with two stories. A German colleague of mine who left Geneva yesterday said, "I have learned enough. It is a fine thing that Germany is definitely getting out of the League tomorrow, that is to say Monday, because when it has come to the pass that the League prevents the country from waging a war, which it needs, that is a good place to get out of."
An Italian, then, many of them will have condoms. He said, "We Italians have come to say that the League is becoming something like the evil hour. You don't have to believe it, but you have to take up with nothing."
These strange anti-Semitism, Mr. Mark. They might as well call it an error, name. They were voted by
52 nations yesterday. How will they be enforced?
Well, I presume that we will be enforced by the same method with which some of them were made. You know how the various products, an embargo upon which to Germany has been decided, were selected. Each nation decided that an embargo must be put on products which the other countries were sending to Italy. Thus, without the intervention of an American newspaper man, it is quite possible that rubber, which is almost entirely produced by Britain and Holland, would not have been put on the list of condemned products. This intervention, however, brought about a speedy effect in less than an hour. Therefore, I judge that its sanctions will be enforced, if at all, through the nations, each watching the other to see that it doesn't try to steal a march on it.
The public opinion in the United States seems to be decidedly against war. Is that apparent to the diplomats in Europe?
I think the diplomats in Europe understand and sympathize with the American position. They would, of course, on the League side, like to see President Roosevelt go further in definitely siding with the League. But his present neutrality is considered entirely in the League's interest, and it is felt that the president will go as far as he can to aid the League in its first historical attempt to punish an aggressor state.
What, Mr. Maurer, is your opinion as to the possibility or probability of another European war?
I think that there is much less probability than there was before the League began its present action. Up till recent weeks, even days, it was safe to say that any state that wished to start something was pretty well able to get away with it. Today, a great many states, like the German I quoted above, feel that if England and the states behind England wish to make the League worse, the possibilities of war are very much diminished. It all remains to see if England and the other states wish to make the League work, and we'll go on to the bitter end.
Here's a tough one for you to answer, Edgar. In the English-speaking political system, we tolerate all shades of opinion. Are we right
him believing that the trend in Europe is for more dictatorships?
I think that problem, too, will be influenced by the outcome of the present struggle between the League and Italy.
If the League is victorious and the Italians have to submit even to an unfavorable compromise in the matter of Ethiopia, then the trend
toward dictatorship will very likely be reversed.
Whether or not such a reverse is more than a temporary movement, whether or not I mean it runs contrary to some deep historical occurrence that nobody understands, remains to be seen. But for the present, I do not feel that the potential dictator is growing. Rather, it is weakening. This trend is enforced by the fact that although all states have bad finances at the present time, the financial position of the states with dictators is considered worse than the not in vulgar democracies.
Well, that's very interesting. We've seen something of the miracle of radio in taking my voice across the ocean this afternoon.
Might have sounded something like a vacuum cleaner.
But yours is coming very clearly again, confidentially. Where would you seem to be than where you are now?
Well, in view of diplomacy, the trouble of it seems to be gathering around us. I can say frankly that I would rather be at anywhere at home, either in my home in Chicago, or even, and this is a great concession for a Chicagoan, in little old New York.
Thank you very much, Igamara. It's been a distinct pleasure to talk with you.
The various members of the family of RCA have but one obligation, that is to serve you well. RCA Communications does this by furnishing instantaneous telegraph contact. Your most frequent RCA visitor, NBC, by supplying you better programs. Radio Marine takes your message from shore to ships and from ships to ships anywhere. RCA Victor brings its 7,000 artists recorded in high fidelity on Victor Records, and better radio reception is supplied through its new 1936 Magic Brain radio with the Magic Eye and Metal Tubes. They tell a story of a group of distinguished musicians who attended the debut of an astounding young violinist. As the newcomer swept adroitly through a series of complex cadenzas, an older and celebrated violinist showed visible amazement. Wiping his perspiring forehead, he turned to Harold Bauer and said, "It's terribly warm here." Bauer smiled and answered, "Not for pianists." The magic key now turns us to a Victor recording artist and the music of one of America's greatest pianists, Harold Bauer. He plays Chopin's Ballad in A flat. Our guest, Harold Bauer, now plays Barum by Tuma. In closing, Mr. Bauer will play The Butterfly Etude by Chopin. Concert piano of Harold Bauer, The Magic Key turns to the dance. Richard Hinder's subtle style is illustrated in his recent Victor recording. His orchestra plays Broadway Rhythm. Thank you.
that Broadway rhythm, writhing, beating rhythm.
Beside that great American inland sea, Lake Michigan, one of the finest dramatic radio performers is waiting to do one of his most famous roles. You've heard Walter Houston frequently in theaters through RCA Photophone reproductions. The Magic Key turns west to Chicago and opens the radio door on Mr. Houston with Nan Sunderland doing a scene from Othello.
The scene is a council chamber in Venice. Messengers have arrived bringing news that a Turkish fleet has set out to attack the island of Cyprus, a Venetian possession. The Duke and Senate have been hurriedly summoned to deal with this emergency. But Brabantio, Othello, and their followers have just entered as the Duke speaks.
Valiant Othello, we must straight employ you against the general enemy, Ottoman. Brabantio, I did not see you. Welcome, gentle senior. We lacked your counsel and your help tonight.
So did I yours. Could your grace pardon me? Neither my place nor aught I heard of business hath raised me from my bed.
Why, what's the matter?
My daughter. Oh, my daughter.
Dead?
Aye, to me. She's abused, stolen from me, and corrupted by spells and medicines bought of mountebanks. For nature so preposterous. Sans witchcraft could not. Here is the man, this Moor.
What in your own part, Othello, can you say to this?
Nothing but this is so.
Most potent, grave, and reverend signors, my very noble and approved good masters, that I have taken away this old man's daughter, it is most true, true I have married her. The very head and front of my offending hath this extent. No more. Rude am I in my speech, and little blessed with the soft phrase of peace, for since these arms of mine had 7 years pith, till now some 9 moons wasted, they have used their dearest action in the tented field. And little of this great world can I speak more than pertains to feats of broil and battle, and therefore little shall I grace my cause in speaking for myself. Yet by your gracious patience, I will a round unvarnished tale deliver of my whole course of love. What drugs, what charms, what conjurations, and what mighty magic, for such proceeding am I charged withal. I won his daughter.
A maiden never bold, of spirit so still and quiet that her motion blushed at herself. I therefore vouch again that with some mixtures powerful o'er the blood, or with some dram conjured to this effect, he wrought upon her.
Othello, speak. Did you by indirect and forced courses subdue and poison this young maid's affections? Or came it by request and with such fair question as soul to soul afford it?
I do beseech you send for the lady to the Sagittarius. Let her speak of me before her father. If you do find me foul in her report, the trust, the office I do hold of you, not only take away, but let your sentence even fall upon my life.
Fetch Desdemona hither.
Until she come as truly as to heaven, I do confess the vices of my blood so justly to your grave ears, I'll present how I did thrive in this fair lady's love, and she in mine.
Say it, old fellow.
Her father loved me, oft invited me, still questioned me the story of my life from year to year, the battles, sieges, fortunes that I have passed. I ran it through even from my boyish days, to the very moment that he bade me tell it, wherein I spake of most disastrous chances, of moving accidents by flood and field, of hairbreadth escape to the imminent deadly breach, of being taken by the insolent foe and sold to slavery, of
my redemption thanks, and portents in my travel system. This to hear would Desdemona seriously in time, but still the house affairs would draw her thence. Whichever as she could repace the spot, she'd come again, and with a greedy ear devour up my discourse, which I observed. Took once a pliant hour and found good means to draw from her a prayer of earnest heart that I would all my pilgrimage dilate, whereof by parcel she had something heard, but not intentively. I did consent, and often did beguile her of her tears when I did speak of some distressful stroke that my youth suffered. My story being done, she gave me to my pain the world's sigh. She swore, she said, 'Twas strange, 'twas passing strange, 'twas pitiful, 'twas wondrous pitiful. She wished she had not heard it, yet she wished that heaven had made her such a man. She thanked me and bade me if I had a friend that loved her, I should but teach him how to tell my story, and that would woo her. Upon this hint, I spake. She loved me for the dangers I had passed, and I loved her that she did pity them. This only is the witchcraft I have used. Here comes the lady. Let her witness it.
Come hither, gentle mistress. Do you perceive in all this noble company where most you owe obedience?
My noble father, I do perceive here a divided beast. I'm bound for life and education. My life and education both do learn me how to respect you. You are the lord of beauty. I am hitherto your daughter, but here's my husband. And so much duty as my mother showed to you, preferring you before her father, so much I challenge that I may profess you to the moor, my lord.
God be with you. I have done. Come hither, moor. I here do give thee that with all my heart, which but thou hast already, with all my heart I would keep from thee. I have done. Proceed to the affairs of state.
The Turk, with a most mighty preparation, makes for Cyprus. Othello, the fortitude of the place is best known to you. You must therefore be content to slubber the glass of your new fortunes with this more stubborn and boisterous expedition.
The tyrant custom, most brave senator, hath made the Flintian steel couch of war my thrice-driven bed of down. And to acknowledge a natural and prompt alacrity I find in hardness, and to undertake these present wars against the Ottomites. Most humbly, therefore, bending to your state, I crave fit disposition for my wife.
What would you, Desdemona?
That I did love the Moor to live with him. My downright violence and storm of fortune may trumpet to the world. My heart subdued even to the very quality of my lord. I saw Othello's visage in his mind, and through his honors and his valiant heart did I my soul and fortune consecrate. So that, dear lord, if I be left behind, a mark of peace, and he go to the wars, the rights for which I love him are bereft me, and I a heavy interim shall support by his dear absence. Let me go with him.
Your voices, lord. Beseech you, let her will have a free way.
Be it as you shall privately determine. Either for stay or going, the affair cries haste, and speed must answer. You must hence tonight.
Tonight, my lord.
With all my heart.
At 10 in the morning, here we'll meet again. Othello, leave some officer behind, and he shall our commission bring to you.
So please, your grace.
Good night to everyone. And noble senior, if virtue no delighted beauty lacked, your son-in-law is far more fair than black.
Look to her more, if thou hast eyes to see. She has deceived her father, and may thee.
My life upon her faith. Come, Desdemona. I have but an hour of love, of worldly matters and direction to spend with thee. We must obey the time.
We understand now why the award for fine radio performance went to Mr. Houston in 1934. Before the magic key of RCA turns again and we draw to a close the third of a new series of weekly broadcasts, may we extend to you, our listeners, a cordial invitation to avail yourselves of the many services and products offered by the RCA family. These facilities have been devised by RCA as the means to one great objective: instantaneous communication among people everywhere. RCA Institute trains radio technicians. For a better radio or phonograph, your nearest RCA Victor dealer will gladly show you the newly announced 1936 Magic Brain model. When you want to send a telegram, RCA communication system brings the whole world within a few minutes of your home or office. Radio Marine carries your message to ships and from ships to the shore. For fine entertainment and the opportunity to hear public personalities, RCA offers you the National Broadcasting Company. Frank Black, the musical director of the National Broadcasting Company, leads the NBC orchestra in a medley of melodies by Gershwin. Be privileged to be your guest at this same time next Sunday when the magic key turns and the members of the RCA family present Beatrice Lilly, Jessica Dragonette, Dan Garber and his band, Frank Black, John B. Kennedy, and a special observance of Navy Day in cooperation with the Assistant Secretary of the Navy, Henry L. Roosevelt, Acting Chief of Naval Operations, Admiral Joseph K. Tausig, and the United States Navy ships and shore stations throughout the world.